D-Mace, Vingen and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen and David Janes here with you. Derek and I are live at Chiefs 200 Broadway at the intersection of 2nd Avenue and Broadway. So come on out and see us during the break in action at the SEC tournament. Let's go to our phone line driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Elliot Friedman, Sportsnet NHL Insider, who is presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Elliot, I am thinking of you because I know how much you love Broadway. It is a beautiful March day here, and we are on Broadway, and we miss you, and we wish you were here.
You know, I just heard that you guys are having a beautiful day. I'm in New York today taping some interviews, and the weather is bad here, and it's bad in Toronto, and I hate you all.
We know you don't actually mean that, but I understand. I understand why you would be upset. So, Elliot, the Predators held on to their top players at the trade deadline last week, including Ryan O'Reilly. Barry Trotz made it sound like he received fair offers for O'Reilly. Do you have a sense of what the Predators were offered for Ryan O'Reilly?
I'll say this. I do think that they were given things that made them think. It was a very confusing couple of days, I'll say, around O'Reilly. Just for me, on the outside, I had heard that he was not getting traded, and then I heard there was a chance he could get traded, and then that went back to he is not getting traded. So, put it this way. I think teams tried to get in there. I think there were teams who were asking, what would it take for this to be considered? But I believe at the end of the day, Ryan O'Reilly said, I would like to stay and try to get this team in the playoffs. I believe that was his preference. I'll just say this. The fact that it went from not getting traded to could get traded to going back and then not getting traded, I think there's somebody out there who tried to make it worth the Predators' while. What specifically that was, I can't tell you, Adam. I haven't been able to nail down the team. I do have some suspicions, but I haven't been able to nail down the team. I just think at the end of the day, O'Reilly made it clear that he wanted to stay on a potential playoff team. And I think ultimately the Predators felt they would live up to their word and not ask him.
I wondered personally, Elliot, if a package similar to the one that the Flames received for Nazem Kadri or the Blues received for Braden Schenn could be in the ballpark for O'Reilly.
I would say that it's reasonable for you to think that, but I can't prove it. That's just the best way I can answer. I don't think it's wrong for you to wonder if that could occur. But like I said, I can't sit here right now and tell you that that was on the table for Nashville. I heard, because one of the things I heard, Adam, was that O'Reilly was adamant he did not want to go.
So, Elliot, the one thing that we've been talking a lot about here regarding Ryan O'Reilly is this, I believe you refer to it in an article on Sportsnet.ca last week as a verbal no-move clause.
Yes.
That he does not have that protection built into his contract, but Barry Trotz is treating him as such. Do you know of other examples of players who have this sort of handshake agreement that Trotz and O'Reilly have?
You know, I'll tell you, very early in my career, I can't remember if it was 1993 or 1994, but it was when I first left university and got into the business. I was in a situation in Toronto where a Hall of Fame player named Mike Gartner was traded away by the Toronto Maple Leafs, and he went wild. And he said, I had a verbal arrangement with the Maple Leafs that they could not trade me, and the Maple Leafs still did it anyway. And, he was adamant. And, the Maple Leafs basically, the GM at the time was Cliff Fletcher, who was one of the nicest people in the business I ever dealt with. And I don't remember what Fletcher's answer at the time. Like, he didn't exactly deny it. But Gartner was adamant that he had been traded despite a verbal promise. And, like, so I have seen this before. I have seen it disputed before. And, you know, one of the things I've kind of wondered, to be honest, and this is just my personal opinion, Adam, is if the new owner of the team is kind of like, okay, just explain to me what exactly we have here, because there's nothing on paper that says he's got a no trade clause or a no move clause.
I am wondering too, Elliot, if the new GM honors that agreement with Ryan O'Reilly, and if this is something that the team and player revisit in the summertime.
It might be. I mean, the one thing I've learned over time is that these things, even if you have something on paper, Adam, you revisit them over time. Like, circumstances change, things change. Like, you know, one of the things we discussed in our hit last week was the shell-shock nature of the team, you know, when McCarron and Smith were traded, one, like, right before a game and one basically during a game. And, you know, the players were shocked. And I think that there were probably some of them who have even written no move clauses who were at that time saying, what exactly is going on here? I think in the off season, if the Predators decide that they are going to tear it down or rebuild a bit, and I do believe, from what I'm hearing about the new owner, Bill Haslam, he's not necessarily against this idea, and we'll see what the new GM says. He's not against the idea. Then I could see more players willing to revisit their situations, including guys who have written one. So, yes, I do think it's possible this will become a conversation in the offseason. But to this point, I believe O'Reilly and his representatives, and his agent is a guy by the name of Pat Morris, who is, and I say this with respect, no shrinking violet. I think they have made it very clear that a promise was made, and to this point, they expect it to be lived up to.
Elliot, let me ask you about the Western Conference wildcard race, because no team seems to want to claim that second spot. Right, Seattle at 67 points, 4-6 in its past 10. Los Angeles, which recently made a coaching change at 67 points, 7 losses in 10 games. San Jose at 66 points, 7 losses in 10 games. The Predators at 66 points, 6 losses in 10 games. So when you look at those four teams, if you had to handicap the race for the second wild card spot, which team are you putting on top?
Well, you know, it's even worse for me, I'll say, because I was thinking that Winnipeg with the gold medal hero might get in. And the day I said that, they got outshot like 35-12 by Anaheim, and they lost. And people were texting at me like, genius prediction there, Mr. Brilliant. You know, I'll say this. I always, at this time of year, I always look for the team that has the best goaltending. The best. And right now, it's probably your guy. Now, I haven't checked schedules, but I was with the Kings today because I was doing a piece on Anza Kopitar, who's retiring at the end of this year. The Kings play Vancouver 3 times. Winnipeg apparently plays Colorado 3 times. Like, that's advantage Kings. I would say this. You know, the Kraken have had really good goaltending most of the year. They don't score very much, but they have the – like, you guys and the Kraken have the best goaltending. I think the Kings are probably the best team. Like, if I had to handicap someone, I'd probably say them. But their goaltending hasn't been very good. And if goaltending truly does matter, you and the Kraken have the best.
I think that the notable thing about Nashville's schedule is the number of head-to-head games Nashville has against these teams that we're talking about. They haven't played the Sharks yet this entire year. So they have 3 matchups with San Jose, 2 of them in Nashville. They have 2 games at L.A. They just played Seattle and won. They've got Seattle in their next home game, head-to-head, and they go to Winnipeg and Edmonton on this trip that they're on right now. So it's that's big.
No excuses.
They only have one No, they only have one game. Right, right. They certainly believe internally in that locker room, even after all of the drama, that they can make it. And Ryan O'Reilly is at the forefront, willing to tell everybody that on the record, off the record, whatever. And then the other notable Elliott.
If he doesn't tell it to them, Willie, he'll sing it to them.
Yes, he is quite the player. He's got his guitar on this road trip, as he always does. The other notable, I think, is they only have one game left against the big three in the division. They're done with Colorado, done with Dallas, and they have one home game left with Minnesota, and they've played three razor's edge overtime games against Minnesota. So I think that's the other thing I would note on the schedule.
Yeah, it's these are all really good points. I mean, like I said, I thought Saros was excellent overseas. I think he's been a really good player all year, and you know, I think that's one of the reasons if I was the Predators, then I would be confident of my chances because of him.
Elliott, one thing that we discussed, Adam and I went at it pretty hard yesterday. My main point about, because Barry Trotz's quote was, they didn't knock my socks off with the trade offers from O'Reilly. And you correct me if I'm wrong, I didn't see anybody really trade a top prospect for any of the guys that got dealt at the deadline. And if we use the example of Philip Forsberg, right? Philip Forsberg for Martin Erat is probably one of the two or three, maybe the best trades that they ever made that just swung the franchise in a hurry.
Yeah.
But it seems like teams are just really reluctant now because it's too hard to get those guys. They just don't trade them maybe like they used to. Was there a guy of that caliber traded at all at the deadline?
Not hugely. Like there were a lot of picks. Like Braden Schenn went for picks. There was Nazem Kadri went for an interesting prospect, but that prospect was not going to sign in Utah. Like, Utah has a couple of really elite prospects, and they didn't trade them. As a matter of fact, it infuriated some of the people they were talking to that Utah wouldn't even consider some of these players. So, you know, Calgary probably got, like, a B prospect, a kid who has a center from Cornell who has a chance to be pretty good, but he wasn't, you know, one of their best players. I would agree with you that I think a lot of the guys have got – these teams are happy to trade picks if they got the right guy, but I would agree with you, like a lot of the top prospects weren't there. I mean, it's interesting. Like I watched Barry's press conference. I know he took some heat for it, but like the one thing I would say about this too, and I think this is important to remember, you know, just because you didn't do it now doesn't mean you can't do it in the summer. And in the summer, it's going to be people are going to have more time to think. There's going to be more options available for teams. The cap is going up. There's going to be a lot more space for people to do things. And, you know, I'll say this, like the one thing I've learned to understand about the players I cover is that they really don't understand giving up when they have a chance to make the playoffs. I think that we on the outside can say, hey, like they're going to go in and they go in the playoffs and they play Colorado. They're probably going to lose in four games. That's the way fans and media look at it. But players don't think like that. You know, players think like we're going to get in and we could, once we get in, who knows what can happen. Maybe we pull the upset. And I think that, and sometimes I think, you know, sometimes I think we forget that. Like Ryan O'Reilly definitely thinks like that. I don't think they ever went to Stamkos with anything. I believe he said that, and I've heard the same. But like, I think that guys like Stamkos, it's hard for them in the middle of the year when they're battling for the playoffs to say, let's give up. That's why they were so shocked that night of the two trades. So, like, I think the one thing about Trotz is I think he knows that whether it's him or it's somebody else, maybe they didn't take apart the nucleus right now, but they could still if they want to this summer. And That's why I don't get – I know some Predators fans were upset about the lack of movement at the deadline. I still think for your team, the biggest questions are going to be this summer. And that is going to be the true determining factor of where this team is going. Because I suspect that your new owner is not afraid of a rebuild, but I don't think we're really going to know the truth about that until June.
And we don't know who the GM is going to be and how that person is going to feel. So that's an X factor as well.
I'll say this. I think you guys are starting to move along there. I think you guys are starting to do interviews. I've heard a lot about people who are current, like, assistant general managers on other teams. I promised you I would get to work on that this week. And, like, I don't like to lie to the great people of Nashville. And, I've heard that you guys are starting to talk, especially some AGMs on other teams. And I doesn't make me think 100% that's the direction you're going in there. But I think it's interesting that, you know, we've talked about, like, some of the big names, the Brendan Shanahans of the world. I've heard you're talking to some guys who have some experience in other front offices, other teams who've been successful. And the fact that you're at least talking to those people tell me it's not impossible you go down that route.
Well, I thought of one thing today that was notable. Brett Peterson, not to be confused with our own beloved Brent Peterson, who
yes.
Legendary assistant coach and icon of the franchise. But Brett Peterson was named the USA GM, I think, for the World Championships.
You
had mentioned his name. Yeah, you had named his you'd put his name out there, I think, at the very beginning when you're just kind of throwing stuff in the world when the story was very fresh. Is he a guy that would be maybe fitting that profile you're talking about?
I would be surprised if he wasn't on Nashville's radar. I would be. It would be very surprising to me. When I heard this week that those were the kinds of people that Nashville was reaching out and asking permission to, it would be surprising to me if he was not somebody on the Predators' radar. You know, look, they've won two Stanley Cup championships in a row. They've been to three consecutive finals. They're not going to make the playoffs this year, but that's simply because they're out of gas. I think it would be crazy if the Predators didn't at least want to talk to him and say, hey, you know what? What did you learn from your time that maybe you could bring to us? So I absolutely think that Brett would be on your radar. Yes.
Elliot, one more before we let you go. I saw the contract for Nick Schmaltz yesterday, who is 30 years old, and he's having a really good year. And Utah's having a good year. And I can see the exuberance for the Mammoth. They want to build something, and it's time to lock down guys. Like, if he was playing for Arizona, I think we both know he would have been probably gone. It's a different situation. Yep. But 8x8 for a player like him, it puts in perspective to me when people say, well, look at some of these bad contracts these teams have. Don't we have to almost delineate what happened before the cap went up so drastically and after? Because the new market almost takes contracts like a Brady Shea or a UC Soros, a Ryan O'Reilly, a Steven Stamkos, it kind of puts it in a different line because the cap is so much bigger.
Well, I think, Willie, that actually players who have term are going to be more valuable. Like, for a long time, when Stamkos was struggling earlier this year and you were looking at him for 2.5 years at $8 million, I bet you there were some people saying, oof, that's a tough one to handle. I think it's going to be less now of a problem. Like, especially the way he's finished the year and how good he's looked and how hard he's played. You know, if you think that if you're like, I think I've heard that players who have term are going to be even more valuable because these new contracts are going to be going like Schmaltz, his number actually came in lower than I thought it was going to be because I actually thought he was going to sign for less term. I know Utah was a little concerned about signing him for 8 years at age 30, but he took some money off his average annual salary and got the term. So, I think that's I think Utah's probably pretty happy with that contract at that number. But I think the players like Stamkos who have 2 years left and any other player that's got term, I think they're going to become more attractive because I think people are terrified of where some of these teams are terrified of where this cap is going.
Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL Insider, has been our guest on D-Mace. Vingan and Donick. He joins us every Thursday and is presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Elliot, always a pleasure. Have a safe trip home, and we'll talk next week.
All right, guys. I hope we finally get some of that good weather.
Yes. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you so much.
Take care.
615-737-1025. Before we get to Joe Rexroth, some breaking NFL news. Kyler Murray signing a one-year deal with the Minnesota Vikings. He is owed $36.8 million from Arizona, so his contract with the Vikings will be for the veteran league minimum. So
wow.
Kyler Murray
1 year.
going to the Kevin O'Connell Rehabilitation Program for quarterbacks in Minnesota. Now he's with J.J. McCarthy, and who the hell knows what's going to happen with J.J. McCarthy. But Kyler Murray joining the Minnesota Vikings, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, Joe Rexroth, live from Bridgestone Arena. He's been covering the SEC tournament. We'll catch up with him next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.